So imagine a master painter, right? They're standing inside of an easel holding a brush with the, well, basically the uncompromising precision of a surgeon holding a scalpel.
Right, totally imposing their will on the canvas.
Exactly. Imposing strict human order onto this chaotic blank space. But now I want you to imagine someone just throwing that brush in the trash, pouring a cup of liquid paint straight onto a canvas and just, walking away.
It's a completely different paradigm.
It really is. And it brings up this huge question for you to think about as we start today. Who is the real author in that second scenario? Is it you, the human, or is it like the laws of physics?
Yeah, it completely upends our fundamental understanding of creation, honestly, because we're so used to that idea of the creator, forcing their vision onto the medium.
Right.
But when that liquid paint is just poured, it absolutely refuses to be a passive vehicle for an idea. It becomes a very active co-author in the process.
And that is exactly what we are getting into today. Welcome to today's deep dive, where we are unpacking the actual mechanics of acrylic pouring.
It's such a fascinating topic.
It really is, especially for any art students listening, or really just any intensely curious minds out there analyzing this ultimate tension between human design and the raw forces of nature.
Oh, absolutely.
And to do this, we are using this incredibly rich critical debate centered entirely on a single artwork. We are looking at piece number 16 by the artist Jairo Duque, titled Candelaria, which he created in September of 2020.
Yeah, Candelaria is really the perfect anchor for this whole deep dive because, we aren't just having some abstract theoretical debate about artistic intention.
Wait, we have a concrete example.
Exactly. We're looking at the granular physical reality of how this specific piece was made. And the sources we're looking at provide this intense, polarizing divide among critics regarding who or really what actually controlled the final image.
Well, I want to start with that physical reality because we have to picture the environment where this tension is actually playing out. We aren't talking about like a romanticized loft with a brooding artist staring at a bowl of fruit. Duke's workspace in Whittier, California, is described in the sources much more like a physical laboratory.
It really is. The setup is incredibly methodical, which I think makes the lack of a traditional brush even more jarring.
Yeah, that contrast is wild.
Right. And the canvas itself is actually quite intimate. It's just 8 by 10 inches.
Oh, wow, so pretty small.
Very small. And he uses Liquitex brand acrylics. But the crucial detail here, the thing you really need to keep in mind, is that he starts with absolutely no reference image.
Wait, really? No reference at all.
None. There's no sketch underneath, no predetermined landscape he's trying to mimic or anything like that.
That is so interesting. So he prepares these mixtures of paint in cups, pours them, and establishes what the sources call a central core of liquid on the canvas.
Exactly, just a puddle to start with.
And then he generates tension to force that puddle to move outward toward the edges. And just reading through the material, it's clear this initial act splits the critics into two very distinct camps.
Oh, totally. It's a massive debate. On one side of the critical aisle, you have those who view this entire setup as this highly deliberate, really robust personal style.
Like he's in total control.
Right. They look at the preparation and argue the artist is essentially domesticating the fluid to create a specific visual language. Like the artist is the master and the paint is just the servant.
But then there's the other side.
Exactly. The opposing critics see this process as an act of eruption and emergence. They argue the artist's role isn't to impose an image at all, but merely to accompany the material.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because I am really stuck on that word,
It's a very
accompanies.
specific choice of words, yeah.
Right. I mean, using an analogy from the sources here, if creating this art is like opening a cage full of birds, you choose the cage, you choose the specific birds, you physically open the door, but you have zero control over how they fly once they're out. Can you really claim you directed their flight path?
It's a great question. And Jairo Duque actually tackles that exact sentiment in his own self-critical reflections from that Whittier studio.
Oh, he does. What does he say?
He defines his process precisely around an absence of imposition. Like he openly states that the color and the movement are just as much the authors of the work as he is.
Wow.
Yeah, he fully admits that he is not dictating the flight of those birds, to use your analogy.
Well, if the birds are flying on their own, the natural next step for us is to examine the atmosphere they're flying through, right? We need to look at the physical laws governing the paint on that little 8x10
Because
canvas.
it isn't magic, it's pure chemistry and physics. Specifically, we're talking about fluid dynamics and thermodynamics. When we talk about the actual mechanics of acrylic pouring, we have to look past the aesthetics for a minute and really understand the science.
Right.
We're talking about physical laws dictating the final composition far more than any human brushstroke ever could.
Okay, so fluid dynamics, I think I can wrap my head around that. You know, it's liquid moving across a flat surface, gravity, viscosity, all that.
Sure, that part is intuitive.
But thermodynamics. Well, I mean, unless Duke is setting his canvas on fire in the studio, where is the heat exchange happening in a room temperature puddle of paint?
I know, it sounds crazy, but that is actually the invisible engine driving the entire process. So acrylic paint is water-based, right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Once you pour it out and expose that large surface area to the air, the water in the paint begins to evaporate.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. Evaporation causes the top layer of the paint to cool down. So now you have this microscopic temperature difference. The surface is slightly cooler, and the paint underneath the stuff, closer to the canvas, is slightly warmer.
So the heat is trying to rise.
Exactly. The warmer liquid underneath pushes up, and the cooler liquid on top sinks down. It creates these microscopic convection currents.
That is wild.
The paint is essentially churning, almost like it's boiling in extreme slow motion. And while this thermal churning is happening, you introduce the next physical variable, which is density.
Because even if all the paints look like they have the exact same consistency in the mixing cup, a metallic blue pigment physically weighs a lot more than, say, a titanium white pigment.
Right, exactly. And when you mix these different densities in a single pour, they basically fight each other. The heavy pigments want to sink to the bottom, and the lighter ones desperately try to rise to the top.
So they're moving vertically while also spreading out.
Yes, and as they pass each other in this microscopic thermal churn, molecular attraction and friction cause the polymers to actually pull on one another. The paint literally drags itself across the canvas.
Okay, so when that lighter paint manages to break through the heavier paint on the surface, that is what creates those circular, bubble-like formations, right? What the artists call cells.
Yes, exactly. The cells are the most immediate, obvious, visual outcome of those physics.
But there's a catch with those, right?
Yeah, the sources point out that simply generating a canvas full of bubbly cells has become a bit of an easy cliche in the acrylic pouring world.
What a party trick.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's the most basic decorative effect you get when you just let the physics run wild without any real finesse.
But looking at the breakdown of Candelaria, that isn't what we see at all. Duke expertly avoids that cliche. There isn't just a uniform spread of polka dot cells everywhere.
Not at all. He bypasses those simple reactions to achieve incredibly complex, almost fractal-like patterns.
Yeah. The central shape in Candelaria is described in the critical text as looking vegetative, like the root system of a plant, or even igneous, like a flickering flame. But knowing he didn't, you know, actively paint a plant or a fire with a brush, how on earth does a puddle of liquid naturally form the exact shape of a root system?
Well, it's because fluid acrylics follow the exact same physical laws of least resistance as a tree root seeking water in the soil, or a flame consuming oxygen.
Oh, wow. That makes so much sense.
Right. The liquid travels across the tiny, microscopic imperfections of the canvas, pushing through boundaries of viscosity and surface tension. And as it does, it leaves these branches and tendrils in its wake.
So it's literally nature.
Yes. What you were looking at isn't a painting of nature. It is literally the blind trace of nature's physics drying on a surface.
See, here's where it gets incredibly complicated for me, though. Because if we look at classical art, we don't apply that same logic.
What do you mean?
Well, think about a sculptor. If a sculptor looks at a raw block of marble, finds the natural pre-existing veins in the stone, and uses those fault lines to guide their chisel, we don't say the rock sculpted the statue.
That's true.
We still credit the human. So why do we give the physics of the paint all the credit here? Isn't Duke just sculpting the fluidity of the acrylic?
It's a really good point, and the counterargument in our sources addresses that exact distinction. The analogy of the marble sculptor actually falls short for one crucial reason, which is active versus passive force.
Okay, explain that.
A sculptor exerts direct, active, motive force. They are physically striking the chisel, extracting material piece by piece. Their energy is creating the shape in real time.
Right.
But in acrylic pouring, the execution is mechanically passive. You pour the paint, and then you must physically remove your hands from the medium.
Ah, I see.
The tension, the tendrils, the way the colors drag each other, that is pure thermodynamics and gravity in action, completely independent of the artist's physical effort in that specific moment.
I hear that, but I have to push back on this idea of total material autonomy. because entropy naturally tends toward chaos, right?
Generally, yeah.
If I just dump 4 cups of different colored paint onto a canvas in my garage and let gravity pull it equally in every direction, it's not going to form a beautiful vegetative fractal.
No, probably not.
It is going to look like a chaotic brown puddle of sludge. There has to be an invisible hand guiding this. Otherwise, it's just a mess.
And that right there is exactly where the critics who champion the artist's control make their stand. They argue that if you look closely at the composition of Candelaria, you see a profound balance between material autonomy and human intention.
You see the design.
You see visual evidence of a master domesticating that chaos.
The texture alone seems to prove that. I mean, the sources highlight this stark contrast in the physical topography of the piece. You have these very thick, heavy layers of opaque paint sitting right next to what Duke calls veladuras.
Yes, the veladuras. Those are ultra-thin, almost entirely translucent glazes of color.
Like you can see through them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are so delicate that they allow the weave of the canvas background to actually breathe through the paint.
Wow.
And achieving that juxtaposition, you know, a thick, heavy block of pigment sitting perfectly beside a whisper-thin, translucent glaze that requires meticulous intervention. That does not happen by just dropping a cup of paint and walking away.
There is also the color composition itself to consider. It is not a uniform blur of mixed pigment. The sources describe these earthy reds and intense greens intricately woven together without turning into mud.
Which is incredibly hard to do with fluids.
Right. But what really stands out to me is the asymmetry of the whole thing.
Oh, the asymmetry is a crucial detail for anyone analyzing the tension between design and nature here. The paint is emphatically not distributed equally.
Not at all.
In Candelaria, there is a massive, oppressive weight of very dense blacks and ashen grays concentrated entirely at the top of the canvas.
And gravity doesn't just decide to leave all the heavy black paint at the top while pulling everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Gravity pulls everything equally. But that heavy darkness is perfectly balanced by what the critics describe as an explosive release of white light down at the bottom right of the canvas.
So if gravity is indiscriminate, how is it possible that we get this very deliberate internal pulse, that compression of black at the top and the release of white at the bottom? It forces your eye to read the painting in a specific direction, almost like it's a piece of deliberate architectural design.
Because establishing those boundaries is an act of design. The artist chooses the precise palette. He establishes exactly where that first drop falls to create the central core.
He's setting the stage.
Right, and he physically tilts the canvas, actively shifting the angle of gravity to force the heavy blacks to hold their ground while the white paint stretches out toward the corner.
That's a lot of manual input.
It is. And perhaps the most critical point of human control mentioned in the sources, the artist knows exactly when to stop.
The ultimate control is just freezing the experiment.
Yes. The mastery isn't in a brushstroke. It is the physical decision to say, you know, this is it. I am not tilting the canvas another millimeter.
Wow.
The artist halts the physics by laying it flat, letting the water evaporate, and letting the acrylic polymers lock into place, setting the parameters, and then choosing the exact moment the event ends. That is the true art form here.
Okay. Okay, so we have established how the physical landscape of the canvas is formed, right? The thermodynamics, the convection, the tilting. Mm-hmm. But who gets to decide what that landscape actually means? Because at the end of the day, we are still looking at what is essentially a frozen chemical reaction. Which brings us to this fascinating semantic debate over the artwork's title.
This is where it gets really philosophical. Does a title provide inherent meaning to a piece of abstract art? Or is it merely a label slapped onto a physical event after the fact?
Because this painting isn't called Acrylic Experiment Number 16, it was given a very specific evocative name, Candelaria.
And that word carries deep historical symbolism. For the critics who believe the human intention is paramount here, the title is basically their ultimate proof.
That's so.
They argue that the word Candelaria remits to the celebration of fire, to the concept of light emerging from dark matter.
Oh, that makes sense.
And if you look at the physical painting, it perfectly matches that semantic meaning. It transitions from those dense, oppressive blacks and grays at the top down to that explosive luminosity, that white light at the bottom right.
See, that visual lines up so perfectly. It feels like the title elevates the blind physics. It frames the chemical reaction and turns this thermal accident into something deeply spiritual.
That's exactly their point.
It suggests that Duke used the pouring technique as an expressive language to intentionally communicate the idea of light conquering darkness.
It is a very, very compelling side of the argument. But the opposing view, which interestingly is actually grounded in the artist's own admissions, they reject this completely.
I don't see how they can reject it when the visual evidence lines up so perfectly. Black to white, darkness to light, Candelaria. It fits.
It fits, but Duke himself admits that the title does not exist to illustrate the image. To claim that he millimetrically calculated the fluid dynamics, the surface tension, and the evaporation rates specifically to represent light emerging from darkness, well, that contradicts the entire spirit of his process.
So if it's not a direct representation, what is it?
The sources note that the title merely suggests an atmosphere.
Meaning he didn't plan the atmosphere, he found it after the fact.
Exactly. The atmosphere was interpreted once the paint had dried. The artist didn't force the liquid into the shape of a preconceived meaning.
He just watched what happened.
He observed what the physics created, saw the natural tension between the black and the white, and then offered a title as a sort of post-creation suggestion. The artwork isn't a manual meant to be explained, you know. It is an event meant to be experienced.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
Isn't applying a deeply symbolic title like Candelaria just our human brains desperately trying to find a conscious author behind what is essentially a beautiful thermal accident?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we are so uncomfortable with the idea that nature and physics can create something harmonious and complex without our dictation that we have to slap a poetic word on it just to feel like we are still in charge.
That frames the core of the debate perfectly. It really all comes down to our human ego. When Duke says he chooses not to impose, that he willingly accepts the accident of the poor, that is an incredible act of artistic maturity.
It really is.
The fluidity of the paint has its own voice, its own chemical desires based on density and heat, and he refuses to silence that voice with his own ego. The meaning didn't force the physical form to exist.
But even accepting the accident is an active decision, right? It is a daily choice to be humble. The wildness of the material only works because it is framed by that human restraint.
Yes. And that constant tension is exactly why observing abstract acrylic pouring requires so much from you as the viewer. You cannot just glance at it and consume it in 3 seconds.
You really have to dig in.
You have to look closely. You have to travel layer by layer, looking at the heavy opaque patches sinking into the canvas and then those translucent veladuras floating on top. You're constantly searching for that invisible boundary line.
Like, where does the deliberate control of the creator end and the pure autonomy of the material begin?
Exactly. The source material actually has this incredibly evocative way of putting it. It says it is the exact spot where the wild, rebellious river and the patient navigator become one.
Wow, I love that.
You can't separate the chaotic water from the person steering the boat, even if the water is doing all the heavy lifting.
Which is a beautiful summation of all the mechanics we've unpacked today. I mean, from the thermodynamic convection currents to the human choice of exactly when to stop tilting the canvas, it is a true collaboration between intention and physics.
It's a dance, really.
We started today by picturing the traditional artist as a surgeon with a scalpel, right? Demanding absolute, unyielding control over a blank canvas. But Candelaria shows us the profound power of a completely different approach.
A much more collaborative approach.
Exactly. And it leaves me with this final thought for you to mull over. If stepping back and letting the physics of fluid dynamics do its own thing results in this complex living landscape rather than a flat, overworked mess days, how might that apply to our own lives?
Oh, that's a great question.
Right. In an era where we constantly try to micromanage and control every single variable of our work, our projects, and our relationships, what might happen if we took a cue from acrylic pouring?
Just letting go a little bit.
Yeah. What if we focused purely on setting the initial boundaries, choosing our palette carefully, but then had the humility to just step back, let go of the canvas, and see what beautiful patterns naturally emerge?
It's a profound challenge to our innate need for control.
It really is. So keep that in mind the next time you feel the need to force an outcome. Set the stage and let the physics work.